for me, the very first thing for me here at Clemson was changing the mindset, was creating a different attitude. You know, I've always had a can-do attitude, but an attitude of belief. And I not just an attitude of hope, but an attitude of belief. Really, truly instill and create that. And I think that comes from being able to articulate a very clear vision of what it's going to look like.
Welcome to the next episode of What's Next with Eric Wood. Our next guest needs no introduction in the college football world. He's a two-time national champion and has won six ACC championships. That's the current head coach of the Clemson Tigers, Dabo Swinney. It's an honor to have a coaching legend like Dabo on the show today. Since taking over the Tigers in 2008, he has won over 130 games and led Clemson to become one of the most dominant programs in the country. Today on the show, Dabo speaks on the culture at Clemson, how they've been able to have sustained success, and what he thinks about the future of college football when it pertains to the rules around name, image, and likeness, and the players getting paid. We also get into Dabo's playing days. He was a walk-on receiver at the University of Alabama from 1989 to 1992 and earned a scholarship and then won a national championship in his senior year. It's amazing the impact that coaches can have on young people today. Dabo, in many ways, epitomizes what it means to be a mentor of young men and is constantly looking to improve the lives of others. That is something I absolutely admire about him. Finally, remember to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. It helps us create great content for you. Now, enjoy the show.
Coach, welcome to the show. Thanks for your time.
Good to be with you, man.
Yeah, let's start off and tell the listeners about where you grew up, and I want to hear the sports you played growing up.
Well, I grew up in Pelham, Alabama. So, you know, I consider myself blessed because I was raised in one town. I mean, I was born in Birmingham, and I lived in what's called West End, part of Birmingham. Until I was right around four. And my grandmother lived in Ensley in Birmingham. And so, but when I was right around four, my parents got it like a foreclosure type. They were building, there was a new community way out from Birmingham called Pelham. There was no interstate, there was nothing. It was just a two-lane road to get to Pelham. And years later, they ended up putting an interstate through there, and that kind of opened things up. But so that my mom and dad moved down to Pelham, Alabama. There was no schools. It was nothing. You know, you had to go to the next city to go to school and things like that. But so I went there and literally started like pre-kindergarten at the little church there in Pelham. But I lived there my whole life. I moved around a lot, but I was able to stay right there with my friends and in the Pelham system. And so from kindergarten, elementary, middle school, high school, baby of three boys, but grew up there and really played anything and everything. But it was just kind of natural for me to play, you know, baseball, basketball, and football. And so I was always playing. I never stopped all the way through my senior high school. I did three sports. And was very successful at all three and loved all three. I kind of loved whatever was in season. I was one of those guys that, like, in fact, there was a point, probably 10th grade, I almost stopped playing football. In fact, I did stop. I told the coaches after spring practice I wasn't going to play football anymore, that I was going to concentrate on baseball and basketball because I was – baseball was probably my most natural sport. Played shortstop and pitcher my entire, never played anything but shortstop and pitcher for my whole life. But I didn't love it. And I wasn't driven to work at it. Basketball was my love. And it's still my love. I love basketball. I played basketball, and that was something that I loved to work at and played all the time. And, football, I started playing football in the fifth grade. And played every year. My older brother, you know, was a football player. And I, you know, always wanted to play for the Pelham Panthers, the high school, you know, as a kid growing up. And it was kind of that. But after spring going into my after my, it was actually my ninth grade year going into my 10th grade year. You know, I was just like, I was an honor society student. I'm playing three sports and it had just become, you know, very competitive. And I was like, you know, maybe I should just give one of these up so that I can really excel. That's what I had in my mind. And I went, that lasted most of the summer. And then right when football was getting ready to start, it was like, I know I can, what am I doing? I'm going to be one of the best players. Why am I not going to go help this team? I'm going to sit in the stands on Friday night. And so I was like, this is a bad decision. So I went back out and I'm really glad I did, lettered as a sophomore but played all 4 years, football, baseball, basketball, and loved every second of it. It was so much fun to be able to compete and be able to excel in all three sports. And then it was, you know, what am I going to do after that? And I ended up playing football at Alabama, and the rest is history.
Well, thank God for college football and Clemson and all that you didn't give it up, because, man, where would you be in life? It's funny to think back on decisions like that and how impactful they could have been. Yep. Maybe making that decision at 15 years old. Yep. and how impactful that could be. At what point did you realize you wanted to coach?
Yeah, I never thought about coaching. That's one thing. I get asked that a lot, and that never was my plan. You know, growing up in one small town, and my parents were very simple people. We had a lot of struggles and things like that. And but the one person that I always kind of was consistent in my life, and it was our pediatrician, this guy named Dr. Goldblatt. And anytime we were sick, you know, you went to see Dr. Goldblatt, and he always made you feel better. I wanted to be my mom's doctor. That was my goal in life, was to be a doctor. And specifically, I wanted to be a pediatrician. I wanted to be like Dr. Goldblatt. That was my mindset. Football and ball was just like, I knew this is what I love to do. And I wanted to go play college. I wanted to play in the NBA or the major leagues or NFL. I wanted to do that. All I ever wanted to do was play. But I knew eventually I couldn't play anymore. Okay, and when I'm done playing in the pros, then I'm gonna go be a doctor. And that was my mindset my whole life. I never thought about doing anything else, which is really crazy. So I go to Alabama, and I was a pre-med biology major for 3 years. Wow. So my red shirt sophomore year, so it's my third year, and I just had this moment in life where I was, I don't know about the word overwhelmed, but it was on my spirit that this is just not what I'm meant to do. Ironically, it was my redshirt sophomore year when I made the rotation and started traveling and started playing. And that was my first year to letter and so forth. So prior to that year, I wasn't always traveling on the weekend and this and that. Now I just realized I didn't love biology. I was doing great in school, but I also realized, you know, this is how naive I was, because I was on student loans and Pell Grants to go to school in the beginning before I got on scholarship. And then I'm like, well, how am I going to pay for med school? And it's going to take 10 more years. You know, it was like a light went off, and I didn't love it enough. You know, I wasn't passionate about it, you know, and when you're not passionate, you know, passion will make you go above and beyond.
Right.
And I didn't have that. I mean, I did it because it's what I had to do to make my grades, and it's because it's what I was supposed to do in my life and blah, blah, blah. But that's why I always tell people, when you're seeking God's guidance, all right, and, you know, he will align your steps. And there's a scripture that says, you know, he will give you the desires of your heart. And I think sometimes people get off track with that, thinking, well, if I follow God and he's going to give me what I want. Well, no, what happens is he aligns the desires of your heart with what he wants for you.
Absolutely.
And so the desires of my heart, as I had was growing as a young man, they changed. And all of a sudden I was like, man, this, and I just realized that this isn't what I want to do. and I'm going to do this for 10 more years. But I felt like I was giving up a little bit on my dream, and I was scared because I didn't know what I was going to do. I still didn't know. I'd never thought about coaching, but I knew that I wanted to get married. I knew that I wanted to do something in the healthcare field. And so I'll never forget it. You know, I picked up back then you had these big catalogs, you know, these huge catalogs at schools, and, you know, you didn't have all the computer stuff. You had catalogs, and you flipped to the, you know, I went to the business school, and I'm like, okay, well, what am I going to do here? And so I go to the business school. I'm like, I'll just get a business degree. And they had this new degree, hospital administration, healthcare management. I'm like, boom, perfect. This is going to fit me perfect. I'll run a hospital. The doctors will work for me. And so I started researching that. And so that's what I did. I switched into the business school. And that's why it took me 5 years to graduate, because I lost a lot of my, you know, you can only transfer so many biologies to the business school. So I did that. I was getting my degree in hospital administration, went on having a great time playing ball. We win the national championship my senior year in 92. And so January of 93 comes, and it's my last semester. I only got a couple classes, but I'm doing my big internship at the hospital. You know, you had to do this big internship for a semester, and I know what I'm going to do. I'm going out into the healthcare field, and I'm going to eventually run a hospital. And in fact, I took a job around March. I took a job with a company. I was going to start in June. My wife and I are going to get married. Man, I got my plan. I'm moving back to Birmingham. I'm going to have a car, and here I go. And, gonna make $35,000 in a car. I was like, man, I am gonna be rich. And I go out to spring practice. So this is the first time I'd never been a part of a team. You know, again, three sports my entire life until I got to college. It was the first time I'd ever played just one sport. But now all of a sudden I'm not a part of a team. And you know, I went out to spring practice just to kind of watch the guys, you know, and you know, you know, they've moved on, you know, it's a new season. It's a new practice. And I remember being out there watching it, and I was like, man, you just never know. And you probably relate to this as you know, all players, I think can as a football player, especially, you know, it just ends, you know, like I still play basketball. I'm 50. I play basketball all the time. I love to play basketball. I mean, I can go play softball. I can play baseball. I mean, no problem, but man, you can't play football. Like, you know, there's a certain callousness that comes with your body that you know, when you stop playing the game of football, you go out there, they're carrying you off on a stretcher quick. You know, it's just it's a short shelf life. And so now all of a sudden that's gone away. And I just remember, and now I'm not a part of team. I'm not competing, you know, that structure. And that daily grind, you realize how much you miss that stuff. And I was out there that spring, but Coach McCorvey, who's actually kind of second in charge here at Clemson now, he was my coach, my position coach at Alabama. And then my head coach was Gene Stallings. And, you know, they just kind of started talking to me a little bit. We're still there. I'm just watching practice. You know, Woody was the first one to kind of say, you know, you'd be a great coach. I don't know if you've ever thought about coaching, and hey, we might have a GA. And I'm like, man, that means I got to go to grad school. Oh no, I'm done with school. I'm going to work. And then Coach Stallings kind of gets involved, and it's like, you know, Coach Stallings is like, hey, I got a GA spot. You start in July. And type of a deal. And I'm like, oh man, coach, I just don't think I don't want to go. He said, hey man, you need a master's. You need a master's degree. I said, you start in July, you know, and it's literally like now, I mean, I'm just going out to practice. Next thing I know, my whole life is being tossed up. And I was so scared of Coach Stallings. I was like, I'm mad when I left. I'm not doing that. I'm not going to grad school. I'm done with school. And then ultimately I came around to, well, you know, a master's degree would probably help me be better prepared when I get out in the business world and go run this hospital. And I'm going to get my MBA. I'll get my MBA, and they're going to pay for it. You know what? Well, hey, I probably don't want to coach, but yeah, at least I can check that box. And that was kind of my mindset. And so, but ultimately it was easier for me to call my soon to be boss and tell him I wasn't now going to take the job, as it was for me to tell Coach Stallings that, hey, I'm not doing it. And so next thing you know, I'm a grad assistant in summer of 93. But and I knew, so to answer your question, I knew within a week of being a coach, as low on the totem pole as I was, I knew within a week that that was what I was called to do. And it was like perfect. It really was like a moment of clarity of life for me. Like all of a sudden, everything in my life made sense. You know, everything I had dealt with, been challenged with, the successes I'd have, the failures, everything, all of a sudden I had this clarity, like, this is my calling. This is what I'm supposed to do. I'm equipped. Man, God has equipped me. He's equipped me to teach. He's given me knowledge that I didn't even know I had. And he's given me the ability to communicate that. And so it was a moment of clarity and also, you know, a realization of, man, I love team. I love being a part of team. I love competing. And it gave me a chance to continue to stay a part of the game, continue to compete, continue to have that structure that I think as football people we all enjoy and love. And so I'm not one of those guys that grew up wanting to coach. I grew up wanting to play. So all I ever wanted to do was play. And eventually you can't play anymore. And so, you know, it just kind of worked out. God just kind of orchestrated that. He literally ordered my steps and opened those doors and put the right people in my path, because that's what he was calling me to do. And I was seeking his guidance. And when you're seeking his guidance, he will do that in your life. And sometimes it's not what you think. So, you know, in a weird way, I still became a pediatrician. You know, a pediatrician works with young people, even though I was still seeing my pediatrician at 25 years old, but a pediatrician works with young people and helps them get better. And that's kind of how I see my role. You know, I get to help a bunch of young people get better, hopefully, with my knowledge.
And hopefully your guys keep taking care of themselves and keep it socially distanced, or else you'll be a hospital manager again too.
Exactly.
So many great takeaways. I love how you talk about seeking God's guidance, and the Holy Spirit will tug on you. When something's not right in your life, he's going to tug on you. I remember coming to the University of Louisville, and I was signed up for their engineering school. That was an incredible school within U of L. And a coach came up to me my first day working out in the weight room. He said, "Eric, you want to be a football player or an engineer?" I said, "A football player." He said, "Okay, go switch your major after this workout. You ain't going to be able to do both." And honestly, thank God, because I didn't realize the type of hours that you had to put in the speed school at U of L. So thankfully, I got some good advice as well. And I used to you mentioned at some point you can't play football anymore. And so we used to always mess with the trainers up in Buffalo or the strength staff, whatever it may be. And it would say, if you can't play, coach. If you can't coach, then tape ankles, then be in the weight room, whatever it may be. So you could use that one with your staff at some point. But there's the start of your coaching career. And then it hits a peak in 2008 when you take over as the interim head coach. Your culture at Clemson is something that every team, every franchise around the country would like to emulate in the sports world, but business world too. What were your first action steps when you took over to get the culture to be where you wanted it? And what core values do you pride yourself on within your program?
Yeah. Well, I think first of all, there's a little spot in there I think is really important to mention. And so I coached for 8 years when I started right after playing. I coached for 8 years, and then the head coach got fired and I couldn't get a job. So I'm out of coaching in 2001-02 and had a family, and I ended up, you know, using that MBA that I got, and I went out in the real estate development business, and you know, we were building shopping centers all over the country. But and it was a 2 year period. I knew what I was called to do, but it was a strange moment, because all of a sudden I couldn't get a job, and you know, I just every job just didn't work out. But I was led to go work at this company. And the president of the company was my first strength coach in 1988-89. It was the only time I'd been around it. And all these years later, this was spring of 01, this guy calls me to offer me a job, going to make twice the amount of money I was making as an assistant coach. It was like, It was this, it was a crazy time in my life, and I didn't really know why God was taking me there. But for 2 years, I was there, and it prepared me even more from where, to where I am now. It gave me first of all, confidence, freed me up. I knew I could be successful doing something else.
Right.
But it also gave me that complete confirmation of my calling and what I was passionate about. Because all I had ever done was coach at that point. And now all of a sudden that was gone. And so it made me a better coach. It gave me a deeper appreciation for everything about the game, the relationships, the preparation, the grind, you name it. And so I came to Clemson in February of 2003, ended up coming here. Coach Bowden had called me and asked me if I wanted to get back in coaching. I said, yes. And so I came here and, you know, was able to be an assistant here for him for 5.5 years. And then they let him go and I'm the interim. So I had basically about 7 weeks to be the interim coach. You know, we kind of got it going and, you know, that's a hard, I wouldn't wish that on anybody. That's a really hard process to have to deal with.
I went through 2 of them in Buffalo.
There you go. It's a tough thing, man, but I get the job. And so now it's like, okay, you got a job. Now, what are you going to be about? Like, what's your plan? And fortunately for me, since the day I started coaching back in 1993, I started preparing to be a head coach. Once I knew, I was like, when I told you, I had clear, like, this is what I'm called to do. Okay, well, if I'm going to do this, man, I want to be great at it. I want to be the best I can be at it. I want to learn. And I started learning. And, man, I started putting a little book together back in those days and just things I liked, things I didn't like. Could be process stuff. It could be discipline stuff. It could be recruiting. It could be, you know, organizational things, whatever. And I just started kind of putting this thing together and just started putting my plan together. If I ever get a chance to be a head coach, like, what would I be about? What's my philosophy? And you learn from all those that you're shaped by and through your life's experiences. And so, you know, I kind of started doing that. So I have my first kind of January of 2009. I got my staff and I walk in. I'm like, what are we going to be about? Like, here's who we are. I think it's so important, you know, is to be able to have a vision for something and be able to articulate it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and for me, the very first thing for me here at Clemson was changing the mindset, was creating a different attitude. You know, I've always had a can-do attitude, but an attitude of belief. And not just an attitude of hope, but an attitude of belief. Really, truly instill and create that. And I think that comes from being able to articulate a very clear vision of what it's going to look like. And so I did that. And I was like, hey, here's, as long as I'm the head coach, this is what we're going to be about. Here's our philosophy. Here's our core values. Here's the vision. This is what we want for our players. Hey, we want them to graduate. We want them to leave here equipped with tools for life. We want them to have a great experience, and I want them to win a championship. And that's the order it's going to be. Here's what we want for our team. Here's what we're going to be about discipline-wise, on and on and on and on and on. I kind of laid that out. And then I met with the players, and I gave them a voice. And I said, okay, here's what our program's going to be about. We're going to graduate you guys, all right? We're going to make sure when you leave here, you've got – you know more than how to sack a quarterback or catch a ball or whatever. You're going to have real tools for life. And then I want you to have some fun. I want you to have a great experience. We're going to create an environment where you're going to have some fun and you're going to win a championship. But what I want everybody to know is that's the order it's going to be in. We're never going to sacrifice those first three to win. And that's where people have problems, is they put winning first. And I believe if you get those first three things right, the winning will take care of itself. Now, you got to understand, 2009 – we hadn't won 10 games in 20 years at Clemson.
Wow.
We had never won the division, and we had not won an ACC championship in 20 years. And here I am walking in, and I'm saying, hey, we're going to win a national championship at Clemson. I don't know when it's going to happen, but if we will do these things, we're going to get there. And we're not going to sacrifice the program for this moment. You know, we stayed program focused. We never took shortcuts. Like, there were certain things along the way that would have really helped us on that team, but, you know, that was going to hurt the program over the long haul. So I've always long-term vision. All right. In making certain decisions. So that's kind of how it started. And I've got signs over here. I came in day one with two signs, one that says believe and the other one says it can't be done with the T crossed out. And saying we've got to have a deep belief, an attitude of belief. And this is how we're going to do it. And I wrote down everything that Clemson had never done, everything Clemson hadn't done in 20 plus years, everything people said couldn't be done, whatever. And I was like, now, are we going to be outside in? Or are we going to be inside out? If we're going to change all that, it's going to start right here. As a man thinketh, so is he. You got to win in the mind and win in the heart before you're going to win anywhere else. You know, ships don't sink because of the water around them. They sink because the water gets in them. Mm-hmm. And we're never going to be successful outside in. What they say. I don't care what they say. It's how I think. It's what I believe. It's my work ethic, my effort, you know, my core values. These are the things that matter. It's the people right here. All right. And so that's kind of how it started. And we went from there. So I laid out the vision. I wrote down the team goals. And then I met with those seniors and I said, all right, guys, here's what we're about. So y'all help me write some guiding principles. And so we wrote the Clemson commandments. And, for example, okay, if graduation is the most important thing, well, I was like, all right. So first one was, all right, number one, we got to go to class. And one of the seniors says, yeah, but coach, we could go to class, but we could have our headsets on. We could be asleep. You're right. All right, go to class and be engaged. And we kind of wrote these commandments. And not one thing has changed in 12 years as the head coach. Wow. The exact same, nothing has changed in our core values. So that's where it started. And when it started, that was just words on paper. All right, but 12 years later, you know, how have we lived out that vision? All right, well, okay, if the number one thing is to graduate. So 9 out of the last 10 years, we've been top 10 academically, Clemson, Duke, and Northwestern. That's it. All right.
Wow.
So I've had 276 seniors and 271 graduates. We've had a Campbell Trophy. Christian Wilkins was a first round draft pick and won the Campbell Trophy, top student athlete in college football.
Wow.
I've never signed a junior college player. We don't take transfers. You know, we just recruit, develop guys through the draft, if you will. So that speaks to evaluation and fit to the culture and people buying in and being transparent, everyone knowing what we're about. Don't come here if you're not serious about your education. Don't come here if you think you're going to skip class. Don't come here if you're going to be a guy that ain't about it, because I'm going to hold you accountable, because here's our values. All right. And so that's living out the vision. 9 out of 10 years, top 10 academically. All right. We 1,000 APR. All right. And so the second thing was equipping with the tools for life. Well, if you look in our program, you'll learn all about the Paul Journey program. And so the very first thing I did was I created a player relations department back in 2009, hired a guy and I said, come here. I don't need a coach. I just want somebody to help me teach life. And so now that's grown into Paul, what we call Paul Journey, passionate about winning, PAW, Paul Journey. And that's life skills, career development, social skills. It's service abroad trips. It's community service. It's, financial literacy. It's agent education. It's which fork do I use when I sit down? I mean, it's, you name it. It is true tools for life. And it's former player engagement. So our former players always have a place to plug right back into the program. And boom, they need a job. They need whatever. Boom, they get plugged right back in and they're connected. So that's Paul Journey. And then the third part was having a great experience. Well, if you've watched Clemson over the last 12, we've had a lot of fun. When you watch us, we have fun, and you can't fabricate that, all right? And then the fourth thing was win a championship. So my first signing class was February of 2009, all right? Every signing class has won at least one ACC championship. Every signing class since 2013 has won at least one national championship. So it literally started with articulating a vision and then, you know, knowing the fit, laying out the core values, getting the right people in place. Everything comes back to people. For us, it's about relation. Our culture is built on relationships. Our culture is built on optimism and vision and trust and communication. That's what's been built. And so to me, one of the biggest things that we've done is start over every year. So every single year in January, I start over and I reinstall the program as if no one knows it. Reinstall the core values, reinstall it. It starts over every year. That's how I protect it. And then also who comes here. If I have to hire somebody, all right, who am I going to hire? That decision. All right. When we recruit someone, who's coming in here? And so making, and just again, being blunt and completely transparent in the recruiting process to where people are actually recruit us now. Right back in 2009, I mean, I signed 12. That's all I could talk in. I can only talk 12 guys into coming. Wow. I called them the Dandy Dozen. Now we got guys coming from California, Canada, all over. But there's a challenge in that too. All right, because everybody wants to come see Clemson now. So but the same things still apply. All right. You have to be just as disciplined now as you were in the beginning if you want to protect the culture that you've established. And so it still comes down to the people. It's a culture that develops leadership. You know, we spend a lot of time developing leadership. It's a culture of empowerment. We empower our players. We don't entitle them. You get what you earn here. You know, that's why you don't see all these issues when a freshman wins a job or whatever, or a walk-on Renfro starts over 2 5-star receivers. You get what you earn. Doesn't matter who you are. And here you earn it through effort, accountability, doing what's right, nourishing the concept of team and family. And so, you know, and then it's program versus team always. And so these are some of the things that are woven into the culture. But, you know, our goal has always been to get everybody all in. That's kind of what we say. So here's what we want. Well, it's a family atmosphere, communication, trust and respect, common purpose, which is the vision, and then a genuine appreciation for each other. That's kind of the foundation of getting everybody all in. And that's what we go about doing every single year. And, you know, it's been a lot of fun. And, you know, that's where I think a lot of people make mistakes is they grow weary from maybe reinstalling things or starting over. Maybe it's something they've done many times, but you have to remember these are young people. You have new people every year. They don't get it. You know, so I love it when my seniors can mock me, make fun of me, say what I'm going to say before I say it, because I know they're carrying that with them. And I love that.
Right.
I love, I got guys all over the NFL right now going, man, y'all know what Coach Sweeney's saying today. It's Working Man Wednesday. It's Mental Monday. You know what they're doing. I love that. But that's how you create that. And so many people, they don't do that. They don't focus on the culture. You know, they just focus on an outcome or they just focus on this team and they lose that long-term vision. Now you have to have a daily focus, but you got to keep that long-term vision in mind.
There are so many incredible nuggets in there. I'm going to have to go back a bunch of times. I'm a note taker. I like to fill notebooks up with, I don't know where my, I don't know what my end game is. I don't know if it's coaching, broadcasting, whatever it may be, but there are so many great nuggets in there, whether you run a family, run a business, run a sports team, whether you're a part of a team, no matter what it is, man, there's so much that can be taken away from everything you just said. And quickly, one of the things that I could envision for Clemson, so what Clemson has built is absolutely phenomenal from the outside looking in. I got to cover a game this year for the first time down at Clemson. I'd only been there for a pregame show prior, and I got to speak to some players and coaches. I also played with a number of Clemson players, so I've seen it from so many different angles, and it's real. With the new name, image, and likeness deal where these guys are going to start getting paid, where Clemson set up so well for COVID times right now with the amount of depth, and you have 4 and 5-star guys just littered throughout, do you think some of those guys maybe wouldn't come to Clemson in the future and sit because maybe they could go to a bigger city that they can play right away? And I know if I go there, now I know the moms and dads are going to want to come to Clemson because they know how their boys are going to leave.
Yeah.
But do you think some of these young guys are going to struggle with the lure of this money that could come from earlier playing time elsewhere?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a great question. And I can just say this, we're incredibly well positioned as far as the name, image, likeness stuff. if that goes down the pipe. Right now, there's some unknowns. If it stays exactly the way it is on the books right now, and I personally don't think it will. I think there's going to be some common ground.
Me too.
And some common sense is going to come into play, because the way it is right now is the wild, wild west. But to be honest with you, really the guys that we get, they value what we offer. They're coming here because they want family. They want education. They want accountability. They want discipline. They want competition. They want to be challenged. And so I don't see that changing, but I do think that it could, you know, college football could get off the rails a little bit if there's not some common ground, common sense parameters put into place, because what will happen is it will become just what I said about our program. It'll become short-term money versus long-term vision. But take yourself back to being 17 years old, and right. Now you have an agent, and hey, I in your ear at 17 years old, and you're with your parents, and listen, I don't know what your family situation is, but not everybody, some of these kids have no guidance.
Right.
And now all of a sudden you have all these, the allure, of short-term money, because you and I both know that's what it is. It's short-term money, because this is a short-term game.
Right.
And so now the value of education is kind of devalued. And now all of a sudden, you've got people missing class because they got to go do that sign-in session, or they got to go do this or that. And these are young people. And I just, I worry about that for sure. But I do think that, again, the culture that we have, the intangibles that you're going to acquire here at Clemson, it's special. And again, this is not a place for everyone. We don't recruit. If you really look, we probably offer there's probably not two other Power Fives that offer less people than we do. I mean, we just don't offer many people. Because the pool that we're fishing in is very small, because we're looking for being a good player is the minimum. I mean, that's the minimum. I mean, we're looking for so many different things. It's a lot of depth in our due diligence on how we decide an offer for a kid. And you take a guy like a Trevor Lawrence. Trevor could have gone anywhere in the country. A Trevor Lawrence would still come to Clemson because of he came here for what we who we are and the way we recruited him and his value of he's graduating in 3 years. Mm-hmm. Deshaun Watson graduated in 2.5 years. Christian mm-hmm. Wilkins, we got Christian Wilkins would still come from Connecticut. He graduated in 3.5 years with a master's degree and won the Campbell Trophy. So, our cult now, when I started 12 years ago, I'd have been in trouble. I'd have been in deep trouble, because you build a culture in this world through recruiting, through graduation, through discipline and accountability. But you kind of have to, eventually you've recruited all your guys. But where we are now, I don't see it affecting us that much. Now if it stays the way it is, I think it's going to be, again, some young people getting on the wrong track quickly. And it's going to end up with, I think, a lot of people not getting their degree, because, and then all of a sudden the game, you can't play the game anymore. And now all of a sudden, I think the game is using you instead of you using the game. And I get the gist of it. And I think it's great. I'm all for modernizing the scholarship and making it better and creating more opportunity. I've just always wanted to keep it as a collegiate model, and I've always wanted to keep it scholastic, so it's the same. So the guy at Louisville gets the same as the guy at Clemson, or the same as the guy at East Carolina. Now, we all know stadiums are different and things, but the scholarship has always been the same. And I want it to be the same for Eric Wood as it is for Trevor Lawrence at Clemson. All of a sudden Trevor comes here and he's getting all these things as a college player, but the center, well, nobody knows who the center is, and he's not getting the birthday parties and, whatever. And, And, you know, to me in college athletics, that creates a, you know, we have that. That's called the NFL. Right. And it's different. But I just, you know, I worry about it, but I'm confident that people will come together. And again, you know, adults will get in the room and find some common ground and some parameters to you know, make it better, but keep it equitable. You know, like I've always said, I mean, I just want to see us emphasize education. I know how important that is. You know, 1.7% of college players play in the NFL.
Right.
And here's the other thing. I saw a stat a guy came and spoke. I want to say it was maybe 97 or 98%. It was or 90. It was a high number of NFL players within 2 years of being out of the league are divorced and bankrupt.
86%.
Okay, there you go. 86% within 2 years of being out of the league. So now we want to bring that to 17 and 18 and 19 year olds. It just doesn't make any sense to me. And when only 1.7 of them are going to the NFL. So why would we devalue education? Let's increase the value of that. So okay, let's do that. Let's recognize, hey, there's a lot of money. There's a lot of things we could do. Name, image, likeness, whatever. Great. Why don't we create an annuity? Like when you graduate, when you walk across that, let's incentivize graduation. Let's don't de-incentivize it. So hey, when you walk across that stage, hey, here you go. I don't know what that is. Maybe it's $50,000. Maybe it's $30,000. I don't know. Whatever it is, smart people can figure that out. But man, now a young person, he's got something, and he's got something to really, you know, because when people talk about paying college athletes, they never value education. They act like that's like free money. Look, it's not free money. This is to come to Clemson. I mean, you're going to, you know, just in a single year, if you're an out-of-state guy, it's like $160,000 for one player for everything.
Right.
And so, you know, that's real money. That's not like pretend, make believe. Like the university is in business. Like the athletic department has to write a check for Eric Wood, $58,000. Here you go. You know, that's your room, board, housing, whatever. That's real money. Just like it is everywhere. So the scholarship has always been the same. And I'm against devaluing education. I am all for improving the financial blessings and resources. I just want it to be the same, you know, for all the schools, for all the Power Five scholarships or whatever, however you look at it. And then the other thing is you got Title IX. You know, yeah. Football pays for everything. We've all learned that in this pandemic, you know, in college athletics. There's 130 schools. This is the NFL. You have 32 teams. It's a different deal. So, you know, I love that. So we'll see how it all goes. But as far as the guys that come to Clemson, I think what we offer here, those same guys are still coming.
Yeah, to your point about seeing the vision and seeing out into the future as opposed to making a short-term decision – I've had a number of conversations with John Calipari and Kenny Payne, who's now with the Knicks, and they've recruited. That's probably the closest thing to Clemson as far as churning out talent in college sports. And I said, hey, how is everyone else getting busted? But you guys are the clean ones. And they said, hey, look, when we walk them down the hallway at our basketball facility and you see John Wall and you see Anthony Davis and you see all these guys and you see these max contracts that are $200 million, it makes it a lot easier to pass up on the 100 grand or 200 grand or the promises of whatever university is making you or a runner or a shoe company, whatever it may be.
Oh, yeah.
And they talk about the same thing. They say, we don't want those guys. You know, yeah. We want the guys that have vision.
Guys that can be manipulated in the recruiting process, we don't get them. All right? We don't get them. I'm very, very transparent. You know, we've been together. This is my 18th year at Clemson. It's my 12th year as the head coach. My staff and I have been together for a long time. We know who we are. We know exactly what we're looking for. And, you know, we don't waste time. I mean, we really don't. I mean, I see it. I've seen some nasty stuff. But we just go the other way. Because, you know, I love what I do. And I would never sacrifice that for, again, oh, this might have – that's not going to help you have a good team.
Right.
It's not going to help you have a great program. You might have a team. But how many, you know, anybody can win one time. But can you do it over and over and over and over again? Well, that's going to take a culture. That's going to take truth and communication and honesty and a lot of things that have to hold up over a long period of time. And that's what we've always been about. And so we just believe in what we believe in, and I believe in doing things right. That was another thing in the very beginning. I'd rather lose knowing we tried to do it right than to win knowing that we didn't. And I don't know how you – I don't think you can coach those guys anyway. You know, guys that you've manipulated, guys that you've done the wrong things to get – I don't know how you coach them. I don't know how you discipline them. I don't know how you hold them accountable. You certainly couldn't have the culture that we have here with all those things. And so it's been pretty cool because I've seen a lot of young people that have come here and walked away from maybe some shady things. And that's refreshing because there's a lot of great young people out there that they're not about those things. That's the type of guys we get. And then you throw it, like, I'm the same way. Like for us, I'm not like Calipari. They have one and dones. Well, for us, it's about, okay, no, you come here. Listen, here's 276 seniors, 271 graduates, 9 out of 10 years, top 10 academically, 130 schools, Clemson, Duke, Northwestern. All right. Oh, by the way, we're the second winningest team on the field, Clemson and Alabama. Been to 5 playoffs. So you can do it the right way. You don't have to do it that way. We've proven you can do it the right way with loving and serving and caring for your players as and serving their hearts and not their talents. You can do that. All right. We've proven that over and over and over again. We've had the number one recruiting class in the country the last 12 years one time, and that was this past December. We average about somewhere between 8 and 12. All right, we've been pretty much in the top 15. But yet we've been in 5 playoffs, 4 national championships, 1-2, so how does that happen? Well, it's keeping the main thing the main thing. It's knowing who you are. It's not compromising. It's not compromising. It's discipline. And discipline is the greatest form of love you can give someone. Let's serve their heart. Let's serve the 30-year-old version of them over this 19-year-old version of them. All right, that's the mindset that we run our program with. What's best for the 30-year-old version of this guy? All right, let's keep that in mind, okay? And then if we do that, then we'll make the right decisions. And if it costs us a game, so what? I'd rather lose. All right. And so that's just kind of how we've always gone about it. And everybody's bought into that. And so guys come here looking for that. They're like, oh, man, y'all top 10 academically. God, you guys are graduating over 90-something% of your guys. Wow. Oh, by the way, yeah, you guys got 1.7% go to the NFL. But since I've been the head coach, 80% of my guys that have gotten a chance through the draft or free agent have made the roster. So, you know, we track all those things and all those things matter. But, oh, by the way, 100% job placement last year for our senior class and the year before. So it's not just NFL. It's everything. It's a holistic approach to what we do. So it's so much more than just coming here to be a good football player. Guys that are just looking to be good football players, they don't come to Clemson. We don't get those guys.
Man, that's incredible stuff. I'll be respectful of your time. Usually we go through a bunch of recurring questions, so we'll do another one in the offseason and hopefully talk about another playoff appearance, national championship as well. But I just want to hear one thing from you. What's your favorite book? And I'll say besides the Bible, and I won't because I don't want to give you an easy one there.
Oh, man, I've had a lot of good books. You know, I think a great book, one of my favorites is called Lead for God's Sakes. If you haven't read that one, that's an awesome, awesome book. Every leader should read that book. The Way of the Shepherd is one of my favorite books. All of John Gordon's books. I love his books. The Energy Bus, Training Camp, which is the 11 characteristics of the best of the best. I read a book this summer called Bet on Talent. But if I had to just pick one, man, I would probably go, you know, The Carpenter's a great book. The Seed's a great book. But I would probably say Lead for God's Sake. I think that is a powerful book on the proper way to lead.
Yeah, I read that book shortly after Urban Meyer stepped down at Ohio State. He had talked about that book, so I went back and read it and thought that was incredible. Coach, I can't thank you enough for your time today, your impactful words. My gosh, there's so many nuggets. I'm going to be taking notes on this one for a while in the impact it's going to have on so many coaches and leaders out there. I can't thank you enough for your words. Good luck the rest of the year. I want to give a compliment to you and your program for how you guys have handled these difficult times we're in with COVID, the social issues. Being around the program last week, you guys are handling it phenomenally, to the point where, you know, we aren't messing around with anything from social distance with interviews. We can hardly hear each other last week, but we're keeping it safe, and good luck the rest of the way, Coach.
Well, I appreciate it. We got a lot of good people, and you know, that's what it always comes back to, is you know, just having great people in place, and we've got that. We got a bunch of great young men, got a great staff, and got great support. So appreciate the opportunity to be with you.
Absolutely. Thanks again.
All right, man. Be good.
This episode has been brought to you by Jordan Yoakum at Tom James Company. Jordan is my clothing guy, and I get everything from him, from custom suits and dress clothes to casual wear. Let Jordan do the shopping for you to save you precious time that could be focused on your family, career, or hobbies. Jordan can work virtually with anyone in the world, and if he cannot personally get your measurements himself, he will have someone come get them for him. If you have put on the quarantine 15 like many have and your clothes aren't fitting properly anymore, he can also make adjustments to the clothing you already have. There's a certain confidence that comes with having clothes that fit perfect, and let Jordan give you that confidence. You can contact him by email at jordan.yoakum@tomjames.com or visit his website, louisvillecustomclothing.com. Contact info will be in the show notes. BrainMD is Dr. Amon's supplement line, who is a former podcast guest of mine. Dr. Amon is regarded as one of the top, if not the top, brain experts in the entire world, and I've been taking his supplements for a little over a year now and have never felt better. I wish I had these while I was playing. I recommend the Eric Wood Bundle to all current and former contact sport athletes at any level, as well as anyone out there looking to support their brain and increase brain function. The supplements I take daily are Brain and Body Power Max, Neuro-C, Vitamin D3, and Brain Curcumins. For more info on each of these supplements, check out my post on Instagram and I explain them all. My handle is ewood70. Go to brainmd.com and use code ERICWOOD, one word, to get 5% off your order. Thank you for listening to What's Next with Eric Wood. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please rate it 5 stars and subscribe. That goes a long way for us with this podcast. Tune in a couple weeks for another new episode.